The following program is recorded content created by the Truth Network.
Wake up, everyone. It's time for the Steve Noble Show, where biblical Christianity meets the everyday issues of life in your home, at work, and even in politics. Steve is an ordinary man who believes in an extraordinary God, and on his show, there's plenty of grace and lots of truth, but no sacred cows. Call Steve now at 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Or check him out online at thestevenobleshow.com. And now, here's your host, Steve Noble.
Today, I will write for you the grand narrative. I will write for you your grand narrative of the future. I will write, and you will listen, you will do. Welcome back to the show. This is Steve Noble on the Steve Noble Show. And since it is Friday, I have plenty of snarkiness built up to unleash on you or share with you, whichever you prefer. And hello to everybody on Facebook Live and YouTube Live. Thanks for being here in the studio with me, kind of. But so I want to talk about that. I've done entire shows on the Great Reset, which if you don't know what that is, just go look it up. Just Google or DuckDuckGo or whatever you like, WEF, World Economic Forum, Great Reset. And this is real. This isn't the next James Bond movie. This is real. This is going on. These are the globalists, which are the world's elitists, governmental leaders, corporate leaders, and just uber wealthy. Okay? Those are the global elitists who are getting together with the World Economic Forum. And now Joe Biden. Joe Biden actually referenced the Great Reset the other day, partnering with the Great Reset. Well, what is the Great Reset going to do? Well, Klaus Schwab is just finishing up 2 days of his little, the grand narrative for humankind. Isn't that nice of him? To 2 days of meeting there in Davos, Switzerland, which is where these guys like to get together. You know, they care about the environment, so they fly in on their Gulf Streams. And just rock the carbon footprint, and then they get together and decide really to fall into the Lord's designs for everything. The future of the world, your future, my future. And so this is real. This is afoot. This is happening. Okay. This is not science fiction. This is not, as I said, a James Bond movie, even though Klaus Schwab could definitely be a James Bond villain. He's just got it. I'll slip into his voice every once in a while. And I'm going to go through that story. Okay, the great narrative for humankind. So you might, if you're interested to know what the future holds for you, I'll tell you via Klaus Schwab and the World Economic Forum. So we'll do that. And then I've got several stories that I want to talk about just to kind of continue to keep the fire built and raging when it comes to understanding what's going on in our public school system, whether it's you and your children or your grandfather or grandmother. Do you know what your grandchildren are being taught? Do their parents know what they're being taught? And this is a big issue. It's all over the country. And so I've got a couple of stories there, including an Arizona school board president who's keeping an actual dossier as opposed to the false dossier, the lie dossier, the dossier that was bought and paid for by Hillary Clinton, which now we're starting to see some actual activity out of the Jim Durham probe. That's cool to see that, right? So there's some of that going on. And I think it was the New York Post. I just saw this story earlier that the New York Post just came out and rescinded a couple things over the last few years, which is a shocking thing to do and see with any mainstream media, but especially a media like it's the Washington Post, the liberal paper forced to retract reporting based on debunked anti-Trump dossier, right? So that's out there. That's good. We should be happy about that. But then there's the school board president out in Arizona keeping a dossier on people. This is an actual dossier. So we'll get to that. And by the way, parents, would you like to know what your kids are being taught in school? Well, that's not so easy to find out. So a story about that, actually written by Betsy DeVos, who is the former cabinet member for the Department of Education, which we shouldn't even have because the federal government should have nothing to do with education. That's not part of their constitutional mandate. That's part of their Article 1 elastic clause, necessary and proper, that we call the elastic clause. So they say, oh, yeah, that's necessary and proper in order to promote the general welfare. So therefore, we're going to get involved and buy block grants and Title IX and all kinds of money that we're going to dangle out there. That's how we're going to control the school system. from Washington, D.C. Isn't that charming? And that's going on all over the country. So that's why I'm going to keep sharing these stories. And then this great Wall Street Journal opinion piece written to millennials. I've got George Barner coming back on the show soon. He's got just an incredibly disturbing, sad report about what millennials believe. And millennials and people between the ages of like 18 and 30, something like that, in this millennial report that George Barner's put together, like 30% of them identify as LGBTQ plus in some way. 30%. The actual number of homosexual, same-sex attracted people across the country, 3%, 4%, 5% at the most. But you've got this younger generation because it's, I guess, virtue signaling when somebody else says, yeah, I'm actually, I think I'm transgendered or I'm non-binary or I'm pansexual. I'm all over the map. Yeah, me too. Because that's the new enlightenment. So this article, this opinion piece in the Wall Street Journal, I'll finish with that today. Millennials Put Away Childish Political Things by Mary Eberstadt. This piece is written to millennials. Okay, so I'm going to get to that. That's fascinating. And then a book I definitely want to read. It's going to come out soon. A Plague Upon Our House by Dr. Scott Atlas, who Trump brought in to the whole coronavirus team that was run pretty much by Pope Fauci and Deborah Birx. And there's some shocking stuff in here. It's not shocking. It's terribly disappointing, but it's not shocking at all. So I want to talk about that. But let's start with Klaus Schwab. So you will know what your future will hold. Okay? So this, they just finished this, the World Economic Forum, the Great Reset, just finished a two-day party called the Great Narrative. World Economic Forum founder Klaus Schwab launches the Great Narrative meeting in Dubai, which aims to create a story for the future that will be the great narrative for humankind. The World Economic Forum's Great Reset is about to have a great narrative to further its agenda. This is real. This isn't like kooky stuff. This is real. You can go read it for yourself. You can go look at their promotional videos. You can go look at all the information they're putting out there. And these are efforts that they're taking to globalize everything. Okay, this is real. This is something he said. In order to shape the future, you have first to imagine the future. You have to design the future, and then you have to execute it. Here, I think the next 2 days, he goes on to say, we will look at how we imagine, how we design, how we execute the great narrative, how we define the story of our world for the future. Well, who died and elected these guys, the God of the universe? Excuse me. But that's essentially what these globalists are doing. You're too stupid. I'm too stupid. We're too wrapped up in our little book that was written 2,000 years ago, clinging to our God and our guns and our money and our democratic ideals and our free market capitalism and the red, white, and blue, all that kind of stuff. You guys are the scourge of the earth, and that's why everything's falling apart. What we really need is a great narrative that will lead us to a great reset, which will save us all, said Klaus Schwab or the Antichrist. Maybe the same. I don't know. Really disturbing stuff when we come back right after this. Welcome back to the future. This is Steve Noble trying to navigate here through their plans for your future, my future, our children's future. And that's the World Economic Forum, the Great Reset, and now the Great Narrative, which leads to the Great Reset. So they just had a two-day meeting in Davos, Switzerland. In order to shape the future, you have to first imagine the future, you have to design the future, and then you have to execute it. Does this sound like people that believe like they're gods, doesn't it? Here, I think the next 2 days we'll look at how we imagine, how we design, how we execute the Great Narrative, how we define the story of our world for the future. How we? Who's we? Oh, that would just be the elites. Okay, that's the deal. That's who's playing around here with the World Economic Forum. And so that's they've got a book coming out early next year, The Great Narrative, that's going to explain their whole thing. This stuff is not in hiding. You can go look it up. It's easy enough. According to Schwab, there are three obstacles in the globalist way of shaping humanity's future. Number one, people have become much more self-centered and to a certain extent egoistic. In such a situation, it's much more difficult to create a compromise between shaping the future, designing the future usually needs a common will of the people. So you guys are too individualistic out there. That's a problem. Number two, we all have become so much crisis focused with the pandemic. But they love the pandemic because to them, COVID-19 shows how the world needs a reset because we can't handle it effectively on a worldwide basis because nobody's playing off the same sheet of music. So we need globalism. Number three, the world has become so complex. Simple solutions to complex problems do not suffice anymore. On the complexity of the world, Schwab added, you have today not any more separation between social, political, technological, ecological. It's all interwoven. It's very difficult in such a situation to really bring everybody together and to imagine and to design the future. So they're taking it upon themselves to do it. Okay, that's the deal. With respect to the first obstacle, Schwab mentions the World Economic Forum's Great Reset itself is a polarizing agent, which the more people find out about it, the more they're troubled and alarmed because, you know, you'll own nothing and be happy about it. That's part of the Great Reset. Secondly, Schwab complains that we will have all become too crisis-focused on the pandemic, yet the World Economic Forum publishes reports on the pandemic on a daily basis. They love this. They want to see it all kind of fall apart because then they get to swoop in and play God and redesign and create. And who does that? Who gets to play around with the stuff that God had already made and then he reorders it? That's Satan, right? That's what's happening. That's exactly what this is. And to Schwab's third article, our obstacle of the complexity growing out of not having separation between government, business, and science. That's exactly what the World Economic Forum strives to accomplish, to be the global organization for public and private stakeholder collaborations, which is a closer merger of corporation and state. It's corporatism, okay? Don't be afraid of socialism. What you need to be concerned with is corporatism. That's what's happening here. The Great Narrative is a continuation of the Great Reset, a story that attempts to legitimize a technocratic makeover of society and the global economy while claiming to work for the benefit of mankind. According to whom? And that's, these guys are so arrogant. This is the epicenter of the elitist globalist movement, which makes me sound like a kook, doesn't it? Like 4 years ago, I wouldn't have said the elitist globalist movement. Oh, yeah, you're a kook. You know, that's like Glenn Beck or something. No, Glenn Beck's right when he talks about the Great Reset. I'm right when I share this stuff. And if you've studied this for yourself, you're going to sit there and go, yeah, there's some problems here. But then the other side of it, my Christian side, my theological side, my biblical side kicks in. And I'm like, oh, you know what? This is actually all setting up quite nicely. And I'm becoming less impressed with the Antichrist as the days and months and years go by. Because this place is turning into such a train wreck. It's actually not going to be that difficult, I don't think, for a charismatic leader at some point imbued by the power of Satan himself to come in and everybody's just going to swoon. He'll be a hit on TikTok and everybody's just going to throw down right at his feet. So I'm not that impressed, Satan, with your schemes. I just don't think it's going to be that difficult. Oh, okay. What should we do next? Okay, let's do Dr. Scott Atlas. Remember him? He's like the one sane person that was in the whole group working with Trump on coronavirus. Former White House coronavirus response team member Dr. Scott Atlas got a new book coming out. This is going to be so good. A Plague Upon Our House. Who talks about, he blasts in the book Fauci, Deborah Birx, and former CDC director Robert Redfield in a new book saying that he was disgusted by their dismissal of what? Of science. Right? They've been claiming, follow the science. Fauci just recently said, if you have a problem with me, what you really have a problem with is science. Which all this omnipotence, omniscience from these elitists is really remarkable. And they can't see that? No, they're thoroughly convinced that they're the answer. We suppress the truth, we replace it with a lie, Romans 1. In a book, A Plague Upon Our House, Atlas says he presented data and studies showing that schools, we're going to spend the rest of the show talking about our kids, should be reopened and that children are not significant spreaders of the coronavirus, but was virtually ignored by Fauci and others on the team. As I finished, there was silence, he writes. No one offered any contrary data. No one spoke of scientific studies. No one even mentioned the discredited Korea study. Zero comments from Birx, nothing from Fauci, and as always, not a single mention by Birx or Fauci about the serious harms of school closures. In my mind, this was bizarre. That's because there's spiritual darkness here. Maybe that's why you can't see it. Why was I the only one in the room with detailed knowledge of the literature? Why was I the only one considering the data on such an important topic with a critical eye? Were the others simply accepting bottom lines and conclusions without any analytical evaluation? The answer to that would be yes. Weren't they supposed to be expert medical scientists too? No. They're politicians. They're politicians. They're elitists. And they got drunk on their own power. Fauci's been drunk on his own power for decades. Really sad. That's just the human condition. Atlas said that Birx told him his opinion was out of the mainstream and said he was a part of a fringe group of people who believe schools should be open. Quote, meanwhile, he writes, she insisted that all experts agreed with her. I shook my head thinking of some of the world-class epidemiologists who agreed with me, he goes through this whole list, and wondered if she or Fauci had ever read a single publication by them. Atlas wrote that he explained the numbers that children did not have a significant risk of illness or death. statistically zero, from the virus and cited statistics from New York City, California, and elsewhere, documenting that while also noting data from Sweden showing zero deaths despite schools not closing and also not imposing mask mandates. But we just mask up the kids. We just mask them up, and now we're jabbing them. Little kids, 5, 6, 7, 8 years of age. The icing on the cake, he writes, was the evidence that almost all coronavirus transmission to children comes from adults, not the other way around. That was not a predicate for opening schools, given the massive harms to kids if they were closed. But that evidence was already shown by contact tracing and other studies in Iceland, Canada, France, the Netherlands, Germany, Sweden, Finland, Ireland, Japan, Switzerland, and elsewhere. Open schools and children's childcare centers did not show significant dangers to children, adults, or teachers. Quote, they found zero instances of a child passing the infection to an adult. Atlas said Redfield responded to the data by saying, the jury is still out. Isn't it just bizarre? This whole thing is so Orwellian. It's so bizarre. But they got on their kick. They fixed their eyes on their narrative and on the end game. And as they grew power and control, human condition, sin nature, pride, and the schemes of the devil himself all mixed together to get us where we are today. And now, like here in North Carolina, I just heard it was like 3 or 4% of children between the ages of 5 and 11 in North Carolina are vaxxed now that they gave the green light for vaccine. Little kids who are statistically zero chance of death, 79 out of about 24 million have died. 79 out of 24 million. Flu is much more dangerous. Riding in a car is much more dangerous. Getting burned in a fire, a bike accident, even getting hit by lightning. A bigger danger than kids dying of COVID. Yet, they've done everything they've done. And the vast majority of Americans have just gone along with it. Again, I'm not impressed anymore by the Antichrist. More on that and what we can do for our kids when we come back. Oh, so good. Worthy is the Lamb. When all this stuff is driving you nuts, welcome back. This is Steve Noble, the Steve Noble Show. When all this stuff is just making you crazy, and I know it does, it probably makes you crazy often. It makes me crazy often. I got to read this stuff and swim in it all the time, which I can complain about it every once in a while, but I count it as a privilege that one of the callings of my life is to come in here 5 days a week and we do different kinds of shows. Just like yesterday, we were talking about a theology of leadership, and we were looking at the life of Noah on Theology Thursday. We do different things. We'll talk about the economy on Money Mondays, and we'll bring mission stories in and testimonials, talk about life. There's a lot of things. We'll talk about anything and everything from a Christian perspective. But the news of the day is important because this is the world we live in, and we need to pay attention to that for the sake of our neighbors, if nothing else, which would include your own family. So I have to read this stuff. I'm paying attention all the time. People go, how do you do show prep? I'm like, I wake up and I pay attention. I'm doing show prep all the time. I'm paying attention to stuff all the time. And so the news of the day and these things going on, whether it's internationally, COVID, Biden, whatever, the Rittenhouse trial, you know, who's obviously a white supremacist. That's why he shot white people in defense of himself. And now you see that. I mean, I could just do this off the top of my head. And just start going through all the stories that make you nuts. But then I hear that song, Worthy is the Lamb. And it's just like this morning when I drove to a Bible study, this early morning Bible study on Fridays that's been going for about 40 years now. And like, oh, you know, let's try something novel. Let me just pray for my family and some other folks on the way there. And then when it gets too nutty, just push away from the table and spend some time in prayer. Pick up the Bible or read it on your device or listen to some praise and worship music. Turn on Caleb, turn on The Message on Sirius Satellite XM radio, whatever, and just push away from the table. I know I dine on this stuff way too much. I know I do. But part of it is what I need to do and come on here and kind of look at it through a biblical worldview and share that for the people that find this show informative and a blessing and a challenge and an encouragement. Just depends on the day and what we're talking about. But don't neglect that part of your diet. We all have to get our foundation firm. And the only way we do that is the Word of God, the Spirit of God, and the Son of God in our relationship with all of those things. And then we don't get our boat rocked so easily. And then we have the joy of the Lord, which is awesome. And we need to remember that. Okay, one more thing on this Scott Atlas book coming out, A Plague Upon Our House, where he's just talking about the madness up there. And he was last month, he slammed Dr. Birx for an Orwellian attempt to rewrite history. She testified before Congress. And pride is such a powerful force. None of these people are going to admit that they were wrong. None of them. Not ever. Especially Fauci. He'll never admit he was wrong. Hey, our former president almost never admits he's wrong. It's not like this is a left thing or a right thing. This is a human thing. This is pride. And the bigger your position, the more you're going to struggle with your pride. And when you can play Simon Says with an entire nation of 330 million people like Fauci has been able to, that's going to get to you. You're going to get a little high on your own supply. Right? Definitely. And so the madness goes as far as this. Here's a story from New Zealand. This is a shooting victim. All right, they died. And then they found out they had COVID too. So what do you do with that? This is a news story out of New Zealand. Can we play this right quick? Here's the news story out of New Zealand. Somebody shot to death. And then we find out they had COVID as well. So what do you do with that? From the World Health Organization perspective. Ready? Hit it.
Aid attempts. Now, since his death, health authorities say he tested positive for COVID-19, and One News understands that several people are also isolating. So then you have to ask how someone who sustained these types of injuries and then died ends up as part of our COVID-19 death tally. Now, the Ministry of Health says that's because under the World Health Organization guidelines, anyone who dies while also having an acute COVID-19 infection is recorded as part of a nation's death tally, whatever the cause of death might be. Now, exactly how this man died will be subject to an ongoing police investigation as well as an investigation.
Other than the fact he was shot to death.
Meanwhile, three people have been charged in relation to the death.
So that's Auckland, New Zealand, okay? So the guy's shot to death. That's the cause of death. Right? He already said it. Shot to death. Then they find out, why do you test a cadaver? Why do you test a dead body? Because there's a narrative. Right? And you got to feed the narrative because we have to justify all the draconian things we've been doing since March of 2020. So here's the deal, everybody. Follow, but make sure you tell them we're going to follow the science. Okay. Make sure, remember that. Follow the science. But here's the deal. Anybody that dies, test them. And if they have COVID, World Health Organization, which is who Fauci and Birx were bowing down to the whole time. Test them, and if they had COVID, count it as a COVID death. The guy was killed by gunshot. He died of a gunshot wound. I don't know if it's one or three or whatever, but that's why he died. He didn't die because they had COVID. But they decide, what, they bring the body into the corner and like on the way there? Oh, let's test him. Get a little swab. Let's see. Oh, look at that. COVID positive. We don't know if he was symptomatic or not. We don't know if it's a severe case or not, but he's dead and he has COVID. Therefore, COVID death. Right out of the World Health Organization. Those are the rules. That's the protocol. That is so dark. That is so deceptive. That is so manipulative. That's just a power grab. And talk about misinformation and disinformation. You can't even go on Twitter right now and defend Rittenhouse and say that you think he's innocent and that he had a right to self-defense. You can't do that unless then you put your LeBron James. You can go on there and mock him and laugh at him for having a nervous breakdown at one point. I was watching that live when it happened the other day when he's trying to explain all of a sudden when he had to start shooting people. And all these people are just blasting him. And the president of the United States, Joe Biden, last year during the election, obviously Rittenhouse is a white supremacist. Really? How did you come up with that? Because he killed people at a BLM riot or whatever you want to call it. Senator, Mr. Vice President, whatever. You do know that the people Rittenhouse killed were white. Now there's a bunch of people online in the social media sphere, in the metaverse, that are like, oh, I didn't know the people he killed were white. I just assumed, because everybody called him a racist, I just assumed he shot black people. Now you watch if he comes out next week, the jury comes out, and if they find him innocent on the most severe charges because of self-defense, then there's going to be more burning, more rioting. And by the way, do you know anything about the people that he shot? I'm not justifying it, but these, like one of these guys was a convicted pedophile. These are some nasty white folks out there at a BLM. Like, why are they there? Do you think because they're down with the cause for BLM and Black Lives Matter and anti-racist? No, they're anarchists. That's why they go. That's why it's such a mixed crowd. Like, Antifa shows up. You think they're down for the struggle with their black neighbors? They aren't. They're anarchists. And so this kid's out there trying to do the right thing. I think it was stupid. You know, walk around with an AR-15 on your back. What do you think? Nothing's going to happen? Especially in that environment? It's foolish. 17-year-old fool. But then he's getting chased down and attacked. And now some of the witnesses are like, hey, yeah, I put my gun in his face. And so then he shot me. Okay. But there's just madness out there. It's madness. So the New Zealand, shoot him dead, test him. Oh, COVID, that's COVID death. So and every time you hear these things, we just passed 700,000 COVID deaths in America. That's 700,000 people dead with COVID, not necessarily from COVID, which is why you need to pay attention to everything that they're trying to do to our kids, not just when it comes to the jab, the vaccine, whatever you want to call it, but what's going on in schools, which leads me to these stories. And we're going to spend the rest of our time on this. Betsy DeVos wrote this article in Fox News. The next battle in the war for parents' rights is education is a top, is a line politicians dare not cross. Okay, parents' rights and education, which is what we just saw happen in Virginia. There's the potential for a new fault line in America's ever-growing debate about personal rights, a schism between policymakers who believe parents have a right to know what's being taught in public schools and those who do not, like, you know, Terry McAuliffe. Wisconsin lawmakers, listen to this, recently passed overwhelmingly the nation's first, most powerful academic transparency law to pull back the curtains on the content of classroom instruction. The bill requires schools to post online a list of the specific instructional materials being presented so that current and prospective parents can see for themselves whether the content awaiting their kids is academically rigorous or ideologically extreme. It remains to be seen if Wisconsin Governor Tony Evers will take his veto pen to this common sense measure or not. But leading up to his defeat, this is Betsy DeVos writing, Virginia's Democrat gubernatorial candidate Terry McAuliffe said parents should have no say over the curriculum taught to their kids. Remember that one? Union bosses and their media allies have made clear parents should have no control over where, when, or how their kids learn. Why is that? Because they're trying to program them. They've been doing a good job, which is like Fred Von Cannon the other day, who's running for North Carolina House, said, you send your kids off to Rome to be educated. Don't be surprised when they come back a Roman. That's what they're doing. That's what the public school system's been up to for decades now. You send your kid to Rome, they send back a Roman. That's why they don't want you involved in the training. They don't want you to know what they're teaching them. And that's the point of this article. So I'm going to go on there because you won't believe some things that were happening in Wisconsin and some other things, like one lady trying to find out what her kids, what her daughter's going to experience in kindergarten. And when she got all the information, they sent her a bill for $74,000. Or like Mary Ellen just said on Facebook, another reason to homeschool. We'll be right back. Mary, you're right. Welcome back. It's Steve Noble, the Steve Noble Show. Hey, praise the Lord for all our radio partners and Ford Broadcasting and several pastors that own radio stations and the Truth Radio Network and Wilkins Radio out in Asheville. There's a bunch of friends. Our friends down in Greenville, South Carolina, and Bob Jones University down there. We're on the radio down there. And I just thank the Lord for that. That enabled me to get this going in the first place. Me get it going. I just kind of said, okay, Lord. But then also, you on the radio, you're listening to a show that starts at 4:06 and it ends at 5 p.m. Eastern time. And then we have commercial breaks, right? That has to happen. You got to raise money. You got to pay for all this stuff. And so you have commercial breaks. But during the commercial breaks, for my friends here on Facebook Live and YouTube Live, well, we kind of have a sidebar conversation. I can go down a lot of different rabbit trails. I'm a verbal processor. So if you want to get a full hour of content as opposed to just the 40 minutes, which is the radio show, then just jump over and watch on Facebook Live or YouTube Live. Just go to the Steve Noble page on either place and you can join us here in the studio, which is really kind of gives you a whole nother level, a whole nother feel for the show. But praise the Lord for radio because that's how it all got started in the first place. So excited about that. And thank God for all of our radio partners out there. So thank you very much if you happen to be listening. So this is Betsy DeVos talking about parents' rights to know what your kids are being taught. And remember, the powers that be, I'm not saying there aren't good teachers out there. This is like ad nauseum. I do this disclaimer. I know there's good teachers out there. I know there's Christian teachers out there, but the vast majority of the teachers are not that. And even if they were, they're not in charge. The system's in charge. The unions are in charge. The National School Board Association is in charge. And the federal government, via block grants and Title IX money and all that stuff, is how they implement national educational priorities on the state and local level by making you beg for the money and jumping through the hoops to get the money. Federal money for most states is like their second or third highest source of revenue. Federal money. That's just manipulation, puppeteering. And it's been going on since the passage of the 16th Amendment. And then when we got ourselves into the Great Depression and the feds are like, hey, we can help you. Oh, awesome. Thank you so much. We got the New Deal, the Great Society. We can do all this stuff. But of course, if you want the money, you have a couple little things we'd like you to do. And there comes the control. Okay, there's your civics lessons for the day. Now the actual content of the curriculum is again taking center stage, Betsy DeVos is writing. In theory, state laws across the country already affirm a parent's right to access it, okay? But after the Wisconsin Institute for Law and Liberty revealed some Wisconsin school districts, listen to this, were demanding as much as $5,000 to respond to simple public records requests about content and a handful of courses at a handful of schools. So you're in there, hey, I want to know what's being taught in my kid's high school. Okay, we'll get that information together for you, but it's going to take time and resources, so we're going to need you to compensate us for that. That's going to be $5,000. How many parents are going to bother at that point? None of them, right? And the ultra-wealthy parents that don't care about $5,000, their kids don't go to the public school. All right, so there's that, but it gets worse. Similar tales are playing out across the nation. Consider Rhode Island. So Rhode Island mother Nicholas Solis, whose attempt to glean basic curriculum information from her local school district before enrolling her incoming kindergarten daughter, earned her a $74,000 bill, threats of litigation from her school board, and a lawsuit from the nation's largest teachers union to block her access to related records. All of that so that she can't see what they're teaching in kindergarten? Like stay in the lines? Kindergarten? Build a blockhouse kindergarten? There must be more going on than just that. And there is. It's given over. Remember that. The progressives took over the school system a long time ago. And so it's death by a thousand cuts. It's the frog in the pot. So it's what starts in kindergarten. All the way through 12th grade really doesn't come to full fruition until the kids get out of your house and my house and go off to college or wherever. Now they don't have to live underneath your roof, and so it's easier for them to just come on out with the fact that they went to Rome to be educated than they became Romans. That's why so many parents in this country are like, what happened to my kid? What happened to your kid is if you send them to the public school system, they were marinating for 16,000 hours in that. Kindergarten through 12th grade, butts in the seats, 16,000 hours. That's what happened. $74,000 bill. In response, states as diverse as North Carolina, Arizona, Illinois, Texas, and Wyoming have already filed our advanced academic transparency legislation this year. I texted my buddy Matthew Winslow, who serves in the North Carolina House. They put that in the budget. We'll see what Cooper does with it. But they make it so difficult for you to go find out what your kids are being taught. So you can't trust the system. Don't trust the system. This needs to be a big rallying cry for conservative parents all across the country. And when you stand up, they come after you, which takes me to this story real quick. Arizona school board president kept sensitive personal information on protesting parents. So he keeps an actual dossier instead of the fake one that train wrecked all kinds of stuff for 4 years while Trump was president. More than 600 parents in Scottsdale, Arizona are demanding the resignation of the school board president. Why? Because they kept a dossier on 47 parents who dared to speak out against his policies at school board meetings. A dossier complete with social security numbers, background checks, a divorce paper, mortgage documents, trade certifications, and screenshots of Facebook posts. Wait a minute. Merrick Garland, the attorney general, sent a letter to the FBI and the Department of Justice about intimidating and harassing the school people. This is the school people intimidating and harassing parents. Yeah, that's happening. This was another one. This is a guy who was working for him. who is out there. Oh, this one. The dossier also includes videos showing a man taking photographs of parents and children in the hours before a school board meeting. Quote, "Somewhere around here, we have a private investigator who's writing down all of their plates," the man says in the video. "They don't know it's me. I covered up my license plate." So they've got a private investigator out there taking pictures of people's license plate, especially the ones that are going to speak up at the school board meeting. And so we've been putting our kids like frogs in the pot for years, kindergarten through 12th grade. Public school system, godless education, heavily influenced by progressive policies and ideology. But it's the frog in the pot, and it's death by a thousand cuts. So it's not like it's getting more obvious now. So it doesn't take a whole lot of work. Our buddy Chad Slotta has been on the show a couple of times. He's gone before the Wake County School Board, showing them all this disgusting stuff going on in the schools. And it's taken him some time, but he and his wife found it. You can find it too. I'm telling you, if you have kids in the public school system, don't trust the system at all. You just assume you're going to find all kinds of bad stuff and get in there and start looking. Which leads to this. I'll finish with this. Millennials put away childish political things. This is written to millennials. This is an opinion piece in the Wall Street Journal by Mary Eberstadt. Just came out yesterday. According to some of today's loudest and most influential voices, the U.S. is in an irredeemable cesspool of racism and bigotry. This lie has resulted in a wide patriotism gap. In 2020, according to one poll, under a quarter of Democrats surveyed said they were extremely proud to be American, as opposed to almost three quarters of Republicans. Only a third of Americans your age say the same. So she's writing to millennials, basically 35-ish and under. Okay, Gen Z's like 20 and under. Ask yourselves why. Most of us wouldn't trash talk our families. Most of us wouldn't trash talk our neighborhoods. Think about that the next time someone trash talks your national home and neighborhood, your country. One such figure, impresario of the New York Times 1619 Project, that's Nicole Hannah-Jones, by the way, says she has never regarded herself as particularly patriotic. Another, whose sulfurous racialism permeates elite education, says that he's never felt free in the U.S., even as his every grievance is celebrated and subsidized. The guy makes a ton of money. By the way, his name's Ibram X. Kendi. He's buying a lot of the CRT stuff going on out there. If they have such a low opinion of America, what makes you think they care about Americans, including you? Many of today's young have been robbed, too, of another source of immaterial wealth, the consolations and joys of family life. This theft is due in part to generational arithmetic. Today's younger adults hail from smaller networks of kinship than earlier generations. You are more likely to have lacked a father at home. By the way, 42% of kids in America today are growing up without a father in a house. And have had fewer siblings, cousins, uncles, and aunts than your forebears. The family deficit is also a consequence of ideas. Generations of thinkers have disparaged the family as the enemy of utopian schemes. And their depictions, so that we redefine marriage, right? Home and hearth amount to a slaughterhouse of dreams and aspirations, especially for women. To the contrary, unprecedented rates of abortion, fatherlessness, and divorce, far from liberating you, have subtracted actual and potential loved ones from your lives. No wonder surveys show that young people are the loneliest Americans. Some of you have been robbed of another rich inheritance, organized religion. Men and women throughout the ages concluded that humanity exists within some form of a sacred order. Alongside that, understanding of the divine flourished the greatest art and science, architecture and music, and human creation at large that our species has ever devised. That's Western civilization, by the way. Permanent membership is none of the above. Secularism risks relinquishing your own cultural inheritance. Western civilization, there it is. This brings us to the political choice before you. Today's neo-Marxism and identity politics seek to co-opt your youthful energies into a lifetime of performance rancor. Is that what you want? She's writing to millennials here. The left tells you that your fellow citizens are racist, fascist, sexist, bigots, and haters. This relentless negativity obliterates youthful hopes. It shrivels the youthful imagination. Worst of all, it shrinks your heart. Isn't that true? She goes on and on and on. It's just brutal to read it. In place of today's cynical exploitation of race, conservatism says Martin Luther King Jr. In place of identity politics that flies under rival banners and denies our common home, it says only the American flag should fly over the U.S. Embassy. In place of ever more fastidiously defined factions, it says one nation indivisible. And in place of indifference to the sufferings incurred by family decline, family subversion, and postmodern cultural chaos, conservatism seeks revival. And that, my fellow Americans, is the only hope for this nation. It's the only hope that there's ever been for this nation. It's revival. Revival in the church, awakening in the streets. That drives a biblical worldview, which changes the heart and changes the mind and corrects society. So go and do likewise, right? This is Steve Noble on the Steve Noble Show. God willing, I'll talk to you again real soon. And like my dad always used to say, ever forward.
Another program powered by the Truth Network.